AP Radio News. I'm Diane Kepley. After days of tension in the Middle East, the Israelis say they've arrested a number of Jewish suspects in the killing of a Palestinian teenager. AP's Daniel Estrin says the teen's mother is taking that news with a grain of salt.
Mohammed Abu Khader, who was killed, his mother, Suha, said that despite the news, she said, quote, "I don't have any peace in my heart. Even if they captured who they say killed my son, they're only going to ask them questions and then release them, so what's the point?"
Meanwhile, a Palestinian American who may be a cousin of the dead teenager has been sentenced to 9 days of house arrest after he was detained during protests. A shootout in Indianapolis leaves a police officer dead. Police Chief Rick Height tells WISH-TV it's time for the violence to stop.
"We just have to ask ourselves a question. Who's going to replace our fine officers? Who's going to be the next one that takes the oath? Who's going to protect him when he comes down to the community support?"
The officer was killed after he and his partner exchanged gunfire with a suspect in an alley. A long-distance swimmer in California says he's lucky to be alive after a great white shark bit him.
"He surfaces to the top. I see him for about 2 seconds, and he makes a really sharp turn and comes lunging right at me on my chest. I had no time to react. It just happened so quick."
Steve Robles described the incident to KNBC-TV. Officials believe the shark was trying to get free from a fishing line. Witnesses say they saw it thrashing about in the water for about 30 minutes before the swimmer was bitten. The NSA has said it's gathering data to help track down terrorists, but a new report says information on a lot of other people is also being collected.
Information analyzed included roughly 160,000 intercepted email and instant message conversations and 7,900 documents taken from more than 11,000 online accounts.
That's the AP's Carlotta Bradley. That report was in The Washington Post. This is AP Radio News. The skies cleared quickly over U.S. beaches after Hurricane Arthur blew through and headed on to Canada. In that country, the storm's high winds and heavy rains knocked down trees and left tens of thousands of people without power. In England, the men's final will be decided at Wimbledon, where two former champions are facing off over the net.
There is a lot on the line for both players in the men's final at Wimbledon. For the 32-year-old Roger Federer, it's a chance to win a record 8th singles crown at the All England Club and secure his 18th career Grand Slam title. Novak Djokovic is playing for his second Wimbledon crown, the world number one ranking, and a 7th Grand Slam title. Federer has won 18 of their previous 34 meetings, including their only one on grass and their only previous Grand Slam final encounter, the US Open in 2007. Graham Agars, London.
The semifinals are set at the World Cup. Argentina will play the Netherlands Wednesday. Tuesday, it will be Brazil taking on Germany. I'm Diane Kepley, AP Radio News.
Runners, do you need a race slot for the Army 10-miler? Join Team Fisher House to become a champion for military families and get a guaranteed slot at this year's race. Fisher House secured a limited number of race slots exclusively for their supporters. Do more to show your support of the military than by saying thanks for your service. Take action. Join the team to make a real difference in the lives of service members, veterans, and their families when they need it during a medical crisis. Register today at teamfisherhouse.org/ATM.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Hi, I'm Ravina. I'm 7 years old and I'm blind. You can help me live the life I want.
Help Ravina and other blind people by making a tax-deductible donation of your used car, truck, or almost anything with wheels to the National Federation of the Blind. Just call 855-659-9314 or visit carshelpingtheblind.org. That's carshelpingtheblind.org. And if you know a blind person who needs help, email nfb@nfb.org.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the McLean, Virginia offices of Optifor. This is your host, Dana Theus with InPowerCoaching.com, with my co-host, Mark Cohen of Optifor. We have a great lineup of guests for you on our show today, starting with Kevin Reynolds, President, Cardinal Bank, Paul Maloney, President, Carr Maloney PC, Dr. Faye Avery, President and Founder of Dulles University, and Buddy Reiser, Executive Director of the Loudoun County Department of Economic Development. We start off with Kevin Reynolds. Kevin, what is Cardinal Bank?
Cardinal Bank is a bank headquartered in McLean, Virginia, with 800 employees. We're a full-service, publicly traded community bank.
And how did you get involved with this community bank?
I was one of the officers to help start the bank 16 years ago. We started the bank June 8th of 1998 in a small trailer in the city of Fairfax. And today we have over 30 offices from Fredericksburg, Virginia, up to Rockville, Maryland, in the three jurisdictions of Maryland, D.C., and Virginia.
So I don't think of banks as starting in trailers. This was a risky endeavor, maybe.
Well, I don't know, risky. We had to raise money, and we were fortunate to raise about $10 million. And then just a month after opening up, we went public and raised about $40 million. So we started the bank with $50 million in capital, and today we have a market cap of over $500 million.
Wow. And so why did you want to be in a community bank?
Well, I've always, I love banking. I've been in banking since 1983, and I was always with banks that were headquartered here. So in 1997, the bank that I was working for was sold to an out-of-town, much larger bank, and I was approached by a group of directors to be a founding officer and to help start Cardinal Bank.
Interesting. And you decided to stay in the community.
I did. Oh, absolutely. I grew up here. I love being here and live, work, and play. And, you know, I think that being a community banker and being part of a successful community bank is a privilege and an honor, and I enjoy going to work every day.
How young were you when you realized that money mattered to you?
You know, financial literacy is important, and we don't have to look further than, you know, 1998 and the Great Recession that we saw so many bad financial decisions. And so for me, my family, and for the bank, financial literacy is a big deal, and we spend a lot of resources helping individuals and families understand the importance of spending, saving, and being frugal.
So you grew up here. What were mom and dad doing?
So my father was worked for the Central Intelligence Agency, CIA, for 37 years, and I got to see public service. And he had a great career, and he worked 6 days a week. He'd leave at 7 and come home at 7. And so I saw the spirit of hard work. My mom was fortunate to stay home, but she gave of her time to civic activities and was the general manager of our neighborhood pool, and I got to see hard work.
Brothers and sisters?
I'm the oldest, and I have a brother and a sister, and my sister actually went into the military and married a West Pointer, and my brother works downtown and all successful.
So, but you decided to go into banking. So you grew up in a family that valued public service, and you saw what money could buy and went the money route, but it sounds like you also have married public service and financial management.
I think there's the blend. And, you know, as I have told people before, that my father worked very hard. He worked public service, and, you know, I saw others whose dads worked in or families worked in private sector. And you know, I always kidded with my dad, I'll be in the private sector, and he would nod. And, you know, I think it's important that anybody that goes into a profession, they understand what they want to do.
How young were you when you began to realize what you wanted to do?
Probably, 21, 22. Mm. And you know, I went to university. I struggled there for a semester. And so my dad found a great job working in a construction site, uh-huh. Digging holes for decks. And, and I remember working in, 90-degree, 95-degree, 100-degree weather. And, I appreciated air conditioning. I appreciated a civilized lunch and wearing decent clothes. So it sort of set me in the direction I wanted to be around business. I wanted to be around finance, and I wanted to make a difference. And banking has afforded that great opportunity.
I don't normally associate bankers with risk takers, but you started up a bank with two babies at home.
Well, it's the funny story there is, and we have two beautiful adopted kids. Our oldest is 16, and we adopted her. And my wife, who had been working, we made a pledge that she would stay home and raise our daughter, Brooke. And so we were in a trailer, and I had left a very successful bank that was being merged with another and, very nice offices and very stable and secure. And my wife came over to the trailer. I remember this February 1st of 1998. It was a cold, gray February day. And she said, "I sure hope this works out," and it has worked out. And and I think to your audience and to folks, it's never too late to be an entrepreneur. I recommend risk taking, calculated, and throwing yourself into it with a passion. I mean, I still get up very early. I don't need an alarm clock. I'm up at 5:30. I still remember getting up, when we started the bank at 4 and work and. It's been exciting, and we're still an entrepreneurial organization, and we're trying to give back. So I'm proud of being part of Cardinal.
So what's harder, running a startup bank or being a dad?
Both have their challenges. I think there's no textbook for dads, and
really,
yeah, and I would say that even the other night my daughter came back with drawings all over her arms, and I said, that just does not look classy. And my wife said, "Kevin, I think you overreacted." And I said, it's, and then my daughter, she says, "Dad, I just was having fun and wasn't thinking about it." And we had some words, and she said, "I'm a 16-year-old emotional daughter." Well,
she said that.
Yeah. So at least she's reflecting on that. But helping run a bank and being part of a team has its challenges. You have to make the right decisions. You have to have, set a course. You have to be a good communicator, and you have to be a good leader, and you have to, believe in all your people and give them the power and the opportunity to be successful.
So how old were you when you started developing those leadership skills?
That's a great question. I think that it's never too early to develop leadership. I was an Eagle Scout, and for my 11-year-old son, I'm making him do Boy Scouts, and I want him to be an Eagle Scout because it taught me public service. It talked about leading, about planning, executing on a plan, understanding failure, understanding taking risk. As early as 12, 13, 14, and I think that's it. For a lot of our employees at Cardinal Bank, we encourage them to be part of not-for-profit organizations where they take on leadership and they run events and they're forced to do public speaking and get in front of and lead volunteers. And so I think that's something that is a core competence that the listeners should encourage their families and their colleagues and themselves to do, is take on those responsibilities and take some risk.
Tell us, did you have a turning point in your life?
Oh, yeah. It was clearly a couple times when you sort of wavered and you have that sort of moment that, you got to say, "Oh, I got to get back on the right course." And that happens in everyone's career, in everyone's life, that there's going to be a derailment. You're going to fall, and you're going to make a mistake or mistakes. And you can't look back. One of my philosophies is look forward, go forward, look back, go back. And you can't change what happened yesterday.
Tell us about the most difficult, personal, challenging opportunity you had to learn that advice.
Well, I think it was, you know, as I watched the first bank, unfortunately, paid for my MBA, and I watched the bank fail. And I was 30 years old, and I realized that, you know, so I looked at people around a room with the FDIC officers, and, you know, there's accountability and so on. And that left an indelible mark at 30 years old. And today, is we manage Cardinal Bank risk management, conservative on risk is a key theme, and everyone, as you face those challenges in life, you just it's important that you know, get back on the horse.
Where do you feel like you had that modeled in your life most powerfully, so that you could take that lesson internally?
I benefited from parents that clearly saw right and wrong. My mom, you know, there was no gray in her life. It was she was a depression survivor. She saw both of her grandparents and parents on both sides of the family lose homes during the Depression and the South, and mm-hmm. and that left a frugality of not spending money and not taking on debt.
So it must have been, it's just the juxtaposition, like Mark said earlier, was very interesting. So you have this conservative financial background, and yet you were willing to take a risk on a startup bank, and it's produced so much success. What would you say is the key to thinking about calculated risk in your life?
And I think, you know, as I look upon that, is that there's sometimes that you're an opportunity comes up, and you just have to jump on it. And it's like one of those times in life that the stars aligned. It was the right time. It was the right group of people. And it was something that I will always cherish and remember with a great deal of fondness.
Well, are you more like your mom or your dad?
Oh, great question. I'm a combination. Both have had a great influence on me. My mom passed away early, so my dad is still in my life, and I'm doing something. He's 84 years old, and next week we're flying to Alaska with my son and a nephew and him to go fishing in Alaska. So 84 years old, and he's still a big part of my life.
That's fantastic. What's the website?
CardinalBank.com.
This is Dana Theis with my co-host, Mark Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in just a moment, right after this Business Spotlight.
Joining us for this Business Spotlight is Wes Burnett, Managing Partner of Cohen & Burnett PC. Wes, what is Cohen & Burnett PC?
Cohen & Burnett PC is a law firm that specializes in integrating legal, tax, and financial advice to help our clients.
And what do clients appreciate most about Cohen & Burnett?
The integration of the advice so that the client gets the best possible legal, tax, and financial result.
So, who is your perfect client? What do they need?
The perfect client is someone who's intelligent and caring and wants the best possible legal, tax, and financial advice that they can get.
And why do you enjoy your work?
Because I love my clients, and they know that I appreciate them, and I'm trying to do the best by them.
So, how many people work here?
We have a total of 10 people working here for the firm, not counting part-timers.
And why do they like to work for you?
Because they know that they're doing what's best for the client, and they enjoy the satisfaction of doing well by the client.
And what's the company's web address?
www.cohenandburnett.com.
Thank you for listening to this Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theis, with my co-host, Mark Cohen of Optifor. Next up, we have Paul Maloney, president of Carr Maloney PC. Paul, what is Carr Maloney PC?
Carr Maloney PC is a 30-attorney firm. We're located in Washington, D.C. We do generally litigation, generally on the defense side, in Washington, Maryland, and Virginia.
And you didn't start out your legal career doing civil litigation. You started out as a prosecutor.
Started out as a prosecutor.
How did you end up working on the civil side?
Well, it's a I was a prosecutor in Prince George's County for just about 3 years. Tried a lot of cases, and then I there was an opening with a firm in downtown D.C. At that time, it had a different name. Larry Carr was the senior partner. And I came in, interviewed, and I was the eighth attorney to come with the firm. So that was back in 1984, and I've been at the same firm ever since. So it's been 30 years. And
you finally worked your name up into the title.
Finally. it took a few years, but finally, 2001, my name's in the title. I stayed around long enough.
So what do you love most about your career in being an attorney?
I love being a trial attorney. I love the fact that you get to meet so many different people. You get involved in lots of different and interesting matters over time. Frankly, there's no better feeling as a professional than being in front of a jury. You've got 20 or 30 minutes to explain your case, and nobody can interrupt you, not even the judge. And it's just a great feeling being able to try a case and get a good result for a client.
Well, and it's a real competitive environment, too. You know, winning and losing is pretty straightforward.
It is. And they say that most cases don't actually go to trial, and that's true. We as a firm do end up trying probably more cases than most. I'd say probably 95% of the matters that we handle do end up getting resolved either by mediation or by arbitration or in some other way getting resolved.
So how young were you when you discovered this love for competition?
I've always had a love of competition. It probably comes from sports. I've always played sports as a kid and played all three sports in high school and played basketball in college. So I've always had the competitive instincts in me. Probably comes from being from having three older siblings as well. They were always kind of tough on me.
But you weren't the baby, even though you had three older ones. How many kids?
I was the fourth out of six in the family.
So you were one of many lost in the middle there if you didn't do something outstanding.
Right, exactly. So you kind of had to stand out from the crowd. But in my way was I always played sports, and I liked it, and it was easy for me. And I think that's probably where I got the competitive instinct, and it carried over into the law.
But it also carried over, you were telling us early, into your leadership abilities.
Well, I think that probably has something to do with it. I was captain of a few of the teams that I was on, I think that helped to instill some leadership abilities in me over the years, and it's carried through into the law. We are a very collegial law firm. We're a very close law firm, close group knit of partners, group of partners. And we try to make it a collegial working atmosphere for everybody that works there as well.
Mm-hmm. So I want to take you back to your childhood. When did you first realize you wanted to be an attorney?
Good question. It's tough to put a fine point on that, but I would probably say in my high school years, and in particular, I had I had one teacher, Blair Lee, who taught constitutional law. In high school. And so I think that probably was the starting point. And I'd have to say that at least 10 or 12 of my classmates from high school are lawyers as well. So I don't know if they would attribute it to him as a teacher, but, you know, I think it goes back to high school years. And then followed through into college. A number of my classmates in college went on to be lawyers. So I think that was probably the starting point.
Did you have a turning point in realizing just how important the law was to you?
I would say probably more so than anyone else. A clerk for a judge after law school, Joseph Hannon, in the Superior Court for the District of Columbia. And he had been a prosecutor in the U.S. Attorney's Office in D.C., and just a great guy, great mentor, great teacher. And I think he probably put me on the road to where I am now. Which is to be a trial attorney, and just a fabulous guy and a great teacher.
Have you had a chance to mentor other people in this profession?
I have, and I try to do it as often as I can.
Why is it so important to be a mentor?
Anytime you can give back, it's a good thing to do. It's the right thing to do. I'm on a board right now, the Washington Jesuit Academy, which is an inner city school in D.C., and that's a great example of something that is, those individuals give back and far more than I do. I'm simply on the board, but you have the teachers there, The president, Bill Whitaker, I think has been on this program before.
I think
It's a great organization. So I think it's important to give back. And that's the more important thing than anything else you can do at this, at least at my stage in life.
You told us in the green room that you took off a year to sell real estate at some point in your education.
Yeah, when I finished college, I knew I wanted to go to law school. And I'd actually applied to a couple of schools, one of which I wanted to go to, and I didn't get in. So rather than doing something else, I ended up getting a real estate license. I sold real estate for a year and then went back to law school. And I thought that was it was actually a great experience for me in that you, as a real estate agent, and it was residential real estate, you have to promote yourself. You have to really be a salesperson. And that was my first introduction to the business
marketing,
of marketing and marketing yourself.
Which you do today for your firm.
You do that all the time.
Everybody does.
You have
really.
To market and be a self-promoter. And so that was an important lesson for me.
Did you think when you took that job in real estate that you might be giving up on your dream, or did you just see it as a way station?
No, I saw it as I'd just be taken a year before I went back to law school.
So you always knew you were going to do that.
Yes.
You just took some time to get a different experience.
Right.
What were mom and dad doing when you were growing up, all six of you, your brothers and sisters?
Well, my mom was a homemaker, and she was kind of the glue that kept everything together, and she's still going strong at 93. She lives in Chevy Chase on her own and still drives. So
wow.
She's going great. And my father worked with a company called Maloney Concrete, which my grandfather had started. And so I'm actually a fourth generation Washingtonian. So that was his background, was in the concrete business.
So did you work summers in the concrete business?
I didn't work in the concrete business, but I did work construction a couple of summers. That was great experience, doing the hard labor and carrying the bricks and whatnot. But that probably was part of a motivator, knowing that I didn't want to do that for my whole life. But that was good experience.
So you never actually worked with your father?
No, never did.
Interesting. Were you more like your mom or your dad?
Good question. I'd say I've probably got qualities of both. My dad was always a hard worker, and I would say I got those qualities from him. My mom was very sociable and, lots of friends and a good sense of humor. And they both had a good sense of humor. But I would say, I got qualities from both.
So I went to law school about the same time you did, and I know that no law school was teaching leadership. So you got out of law school, you started working as an attorney, but now you're leading a medium-sized law firm. Where did you learn your leadership skills?
I think it comes from over the years, and again, I'm going to relate it back to sports, because you have competition in the law, and being a leader on sports teams, I think that's helped. And you're right, they don't teach leadership in law schools. They also don't teach marketing in law schools, and so it's more as you go along and as you become more and more experienced in what you do, you're more comfortable in it. And, to be a leader, I wouldn't say I'm a natural-born leader, but I have enjoyed taking the lead in the firm. We do a lot of activities in the firm to bring along the younger associates and to get involved in training and whatnot, and we do a lot of fun things as well, annual meetings with the associates, and I enjoy it. It's great fun.
So I'm curious, you love your profession and you love to mentor. What would you tell listeners who are thinking about a career in the law? What would you tell them as a surefire sign they should do it?
I tell you, a good way to see if it's the profession for you is to get involved in a way where you can get a sense as to what lawyers do. Maybe work as a paralegal in a law firm or an intern in a law firm. We actually have an intern coming in from the Washington Jesuit Academy starting next week. And so we hope to be able to train people that way to see if they want to be lawyers in the future. So that would be my advice. And I think that too many kids coming out of college now would say as a default, I'm going to go to law school, without really knowing that they want to do that. And I would advise them against doing that, unless they really want to be a lawyer, because it is hard work. It's tedious. It's not the
people
the,
tell jokes about you
all the time, all the time. I've got some I'll tell you afterwards, but it's not as glamorous as you would think, and a lot of document review, and so it's not like the TV programs that you see all the time, and so they really should want to do it if they're going to go to law school and get some sense as to what it's like.
One last question. You have children.
I do.
I'm wondering, is it harder running a law firm or a family?
That is a very good question. They both have their challenges, and I would say my wife, Lois, should probably weigh in on this.
And we can have her back with you next time.
Yeah, she has spent the bulk of the time raising the children, and so I've been in a support role in the household, and that has had challenges, but mostly great moments raising four wonderful children. And with the law firm, it's been nothing but a good experience. And particularly over the last 15, 20 years or so, I really enjoy what I do, and it's very rewarding.
What's the website?
www.carmaloneywith2rs.com.
This is Dana Theis with my co-host, Mark Cohen of Optifor. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
Joining us for this business spotlight is Dana Theis, president of InPowerCoaching.com. Dana, what is InPowerCoaching.com?
InPowerCoaching.com is a really unique online and in-person coaching experience for mid-level employees who want to get on and stay on the leadership track.
And what do your clients appreciate most about InPowerCoaching.com?
Well, what clients really get out of InPower Coaching is an opportunity to achieve professional success by developing themselves personally. So the way that they develop their own personal skills, dealing with other people, benefits them at work and in their family and their homes, and they become more of who they naturally are, all while achieving more professional success.
So who is your perfect client, and what do they need?
So a perfect client for InPowerCoaching.com is someone who really doesn't have time for professional development but is dedicated to developing themselves personally anyway, and they look for online and in-person opportunities whenever they have time and ever have the ability to work on themselves. And they put their own program together and achieve success on their own terms.
And what is your website address?
www.InPowerCoaching.com. That's InPowerCoaching.com.
Thank you for listening to this Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theis, with my co-hosts, Les Smolin and Luca Salvi. Next up, we have Buddy Reiser, Acting Director of the Loudoun County Department of Economic Development. Buddy, what is the Loudoun County Department of Economic Development?
We're the business arm of the local government. Our job is to increase the commercial tax base by attracting and retaining and helping our companies expand.
And how big is the organization?
We have about 24 people in our department. The county government's probably 2,000 plus.
And how did you get involved?
I took this job 7 years ago with the idea that coming from a Fortune 500 background and a small business owner background, that I could add some value and help companies grow, and thought it would be a great experience for the second phase of my professional career.
So the second phase. What was the first phase?
I was a radio broadcaster for most of my life. I started when I was 15 years old on the radio and did that for about 25 years, and then bought my own radio station, which I ran for about 5 years.
15 years old. And you started your own radio program?
Yeah, I did. And it's something that I knew very young that that's what I wanted to do when I grew up.
How did you know that?
I'm very stubborn. I decided early on that was me. I was going to be a radio guy. And I put my entire imagination behind the idea of doing it. So by the time it really happened at age 15, I was prepared and ready to go.
Who actually said to you that You've got to be in radio. I mean, was there anybody that influenced that decision, or how'd you come up with it?
No, I think for me, I was just looking very hard at what I wanted to do, and I got very focused on that. And the music came first, listening to the music, discovering new music, so that when
this is you as a child.
This is me
to
as
music?
A child, yeah.
What kind of music were you listening to?
Well, you know, I was started as a pop baby, and then kind of got into the rock music as I grew a little bit older.
And what was the significance for you of music growing up?
I think that it was the creative outlet. It was understanding how the music kind of changed people's lives, and I found it transformative. I never felt better than when I was listening to music.
When did you know that?
I can't remember ever not knowing that.
Really?
Yeah.
So, buddy, you were a radio guy for 25 years, and then you made your way now to the Department of Economic Development for Loudoun County.
Mm-hmm.
What did you take from your radio days that you use today in your job?
Well, I think it's all of it. It's the ability to relate to people. It's the ability to craft a message and be able to communicate that message. It's the ability to talk to people and understand what they need out of the experience and then be able to kind of transfer those skills. At the end of the day, sales is always going to be about communication, and really that's what I do.
And then you're also a local guy here in the area, right?
Yeah, grew up in the region, grew up in Hagerstown, went to college in Baltimore, worked most of my life in Washington, D.C., and now very happy to be in Loudoun County, Virginia.
And is that an important part of what you do today, having that local background? Does that benefit you at all?
I think it does. I think that I understand the people here. I think I understand what's important. I understand what their values are. And I can speak their language. We have common backgrounds and common things that we can talk about and understand.
Why is the message so important? Why isn't it about the showmanship?
I think that showmanship without message is just a wasted exercise. I think it's all about being able to communicate a value proposition. In my business now, what I'm selling is confidence, that companies can come to Loudoun County, that they can have the confidence that we'll do everything that we can to help them succeed. And I think that that's what we're trying to leave with people.
So I'm hearing a theme here of confidence, because you described your childhood as stubbornness, but a 10-year-old that decides to go into radio and does it by the age of 15 has got to be pretty confident.
Yeah, I think that I think most people will tell you that I don't lack for confidence on a general basis. But, you know, I think I learned very young how to set goals and how to achieve goals. And, you know, I set out to be an Eagle Scout and did that at the very youngest possible age. And I wanted to graduate college in 3.5 years, and I did that with honors. So I think that when you start to have these successes behind you, it gives you a little bit of confidence and gives you the kind of feeling that you can do things and can accomplish things.
So go back to when you first realized that this game of gaining confidence was an important part of growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Who were the people that were influencing you then? What was mom or dad doing?
Well, I think that they were always very supportive. They raised three very different kids in three very different ways. And so I give them a lot of credit for being able to do that. I think they were always there to try to help us feel good about what we were doing and help us build on our successes.
So tell us a little bit more about the three different ways. How are you different from your other two siblings?
Well, I'm all about books and music and being out there. My brother is all about cars and hunting and is very much more reserved. And my sister is completely different than those two things. She's also very quiet and does more mathematics and those types of things, and has her MBA. And so we all grew up different and doing different things and having different goals, and my parents supported all three of us in whatever we wanted to do.
How did they do that with you specifically?
They never put any limits on me. They, you know, when you're a 10-year-old boy and your dream is to be on the radio, I think that there might be parents who go, you know, why don't, you know, you're a straight-A student. Why don't you think about being something else? Or why don't you think about, you know, try to sway me? They always supported what my goals were.
So they knew back when you were 10 that this is what your dream was.
I think even before then, that was my dream, to be on the radio.
What do you think? Go ahead.
Is your work today helping small businesses in Loudoun County? Is it something about that, helping dreams come true?
I think it is. I think that, and seeing a community grow, the growth that we've seen in Loudoun County over the last 7 years is something that I get excited about. Getting up every day and going to work and helping to build that community and help businesses grow and help entrepreneurs start their business. That's really what gets me up in the morning these days.
And yet, you showed me a picture earlier. Our listeners can't hear. He's in a lovely suit, very, very businesslike. But you showed me a picture of you with Aerosmith, not wearing a suit.
Yeah, I think I was in almond leather with my hair halfway down my back. And, you know,
right.
Now I have no hair and $1,000 suits. So, you know, things change. You know, I'm 5 years ago, I was over 310 pounds. Now I'm pretty svelte 180 and work very hard to keep it off. So
where did that desire to change your life so completely come from?
I think I just woke up one day and said it's time to start again, time to hit control alt delete and let's try this whole thing again. And I'm very fortunate because I've been able to follow two dreams really to a very high level, and I feel very blessed by that, and I don't take that for granted any days.
Is that confidence? Does it come from confidence? Or, I mean, most people follow one track and that's it. You're saying you followed two dreams.
I didn't want to continue my old dream. I achieved what I was looking to do. So once I achieved that, I knew that I needed to set myself on a different course. I needed to reinvent and I needed to go for something different. And that's what I did.
And tell us about when you decided to reinvent yourself. Was it something that you had planned and targeted, or was it something that sort of came unexpectedly?
No, I think that for me, it became organic because I became involved with economic development commissions through my radio days, and I started to see what value there could be in having that kind of expertise helping business, and I just kind of said, well, you know what? Maybe that's what I want to do going forward.
So there's a lot of people listening to this right now who may have a dream, and it may be to change careers. And we know there's some challenges there. What advice would you give to people who really want to change their life so completely?
I think that you have to throw yourself into it completely. You have to commit to being a different person, not inside, but you have to reinvent yourself, pick up a new skill set, or at least hone your skill set and really commit to being different. Take off the leather suit, cut your hair, get a nice suit, and go to work every day. Mm-hmm. You know, I would go entire years in my radio career where I wouldn't even wear long pants. You know, it's a different thing, but you have to commit to that in order to succeed these days.
So your dreams are important, but so is doing it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. What do you think when you look back at the story that you were kind of crafting when you were younger, and how that ties to what you're doing now?
I think it all ties together very nicely. I mean, I think at the end of the day, my goal was to succeed. My goal was to do something that was valuable, and my goal was to do something that I could be proud of, and that my parents could be proud of. So I don't feel comfortable in where you feel like you can be successful. I think that is one of the biggest recipes for success.
Looking back, or perhaps even now, what would your parents say be most surprised about?
Boy, I don't know. I'd like to think that they are very proud. I like to think that you know, my father likes to tease, and so he says, for the first time in my life, I have a real job. He never thought being on the radio was a real job, though I know he was proud of that. But I think that he understands putting on a suit and going to work every day. So I think that they would be very proud of everything I've done so far.
And how about all those rock stars you used to travel with? If they could all be sitting here with us in this tiny little room and say, what's the one thing they take away from being with Buddy? What would they what would they tell us?
I think that they would probably tell you that there were some wild times back in the day. You know, we did a lot of fun things, and you know, traveled around the world. You know, I used to travel around the world with rock stars. Now I travel around the world with CEOs and the chairman of our board of supervisors. It's a slightly different way of going, but it's that was a great life, and this is a great life too.
Great. What's the website?
You can find us at biz.loudoun.gov.
This is Dana Theis with my co-hosts, Les Smolin and Luca Salvi. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in just a moment, right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrix. Welcome, Jody. Jody, what is Acumetrix?
Acumetrix is a firm that works with CEOs that are interested in growing their revenues and bottom lines in a scalable, sustainable way.
And what's your role within the company?
I'm the founder and president.
And what is it about the job that you bring that's so unique to you, that special gift, as we say?
That special gift? I enjoy working with the CEOs to have them achieve goals that they thought were impossible.
And what is it about the organization that makes it so special?
Our clients say that it's the three P's: our people, our platform, and our processes. Our people are highly qualified, and they're fun to work with. Mm-hmm. Our processes are enabling of reliable and timely financial information, and our platform is scalable.
And who is, or what is, perhaps, the perfect client for you?
Businesses of any size that want reliable, timely financial information.
Mm-hmm. And what do you enjoy most about this work?
I enjoy working with the clients and making a difference. We like to help the CEOs understand their financial information so they can make different choices tomorrow to impact future results of the business.
That's great. What's the website for the company?
www.acumetrixllc.com.
Thank you, Jody.
Thanks, Les.
We've been speaking with Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrix. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theus, with my co-host, Mark Cohen, with Optifor. Next, we have Dr. Faye Avery, president and founder of Dulles University. Faye, what is Dulles University?
Dulles University is a cloud-based learning institution that focuses on the working professional.
Cloud-based. So the you sit up there in the clouds and teach.
Absolutely correct. The normal name is called online education, but as most technologists know, everything now is in the cloud.
And how old is Dulles University?
Actually, it was conceived in 2010 and was approved by the state of Virginia in 2011, and then it gained its authority to award degrees also in 2011. And then through the curriculum development process, we became an active school enrolling students in 2012.
So you're the founder. Why did you decide to found an online cloud-based university?
Because I felt that many of the programs that are being offered are choices to students today that actually not meet the needs of the working professional. Hmm. I found myself, when I was pursuing my doctorate degree, having to give up four nights a week in the course of a year to meet the quote-unquote requirement of a full-time student. I found that that interfered with my life, almost led to a divorce, as a matter of fact. And I thought that the working professional needs a program that would provide flexibility that could be arranged around their own schedule. So it added, we had to have something that was flexible. We had to have something that would, at the same time, create the kind of environment for learning that would meet the individual needs of the working professional.
And it's interesting because having chatted with you before, Mark and I both, we came away with a sense of like, you're really committed to education. To finding a way to make it accessible to people. How young were you when education became so important to you?
I would say I was probably in elementary school when I first built my first project and took it into the teacher. And she appreciated the paper airplane that I had developed with my father. And consequently, because I got that praise, I thought, oh, this is great. I love doing things. And that's when I learned that by doing things myself, it gave me a sense of fulfillment, and I learned. And I think the key to education today, if that's maybe even considered a turning point, so to speak, is that students need to be engaged and involved in the learning process.
Which is really interesting because that is a more modern concept of education than when you were in school. You were very farsighted in terms of seeing how it really works as opposed to how it was being told to you.
Modern, I'm not sure, because Confucius once said, tell me and I'll forget. Show me, I may remember, but involve me, I will remember.
Mm-hmm. That's a good basis for it. So was education important in your household when growing up?
Well, my father put great emphasis on that. He himself had been denied the opportunity to even graduate from high school because at age, in the eighth grade, he had to leave school to go to work the farm, etc. So when he got married, my mother, who fortunately had gone on for advanced training, said that education is what this is all about. And so we're going to do things to help you go to school. And we wanted to be the first in her family, our family, mm-hmm. to graduate from college.
And you did.
Yes.
So what was a turning point in your life?
Turning point in terms of education?
Yes.
The fact that my father put emphasis that we were going to further our education and become the first in his family to get a degree. It was to the point that my mother was well organized, and so she had schedules. We had time to study. We had time that she spent with us working one-on-one, which I still think is very important in today's society, that people work one-on-one with their child. She recognized that I have my own little quirks in learning, and so consequently she was able to meet those challenges. And that was, I would guess, my parents' influence was the biggest turning point for me getting an education.
You have started a university, which is an entrepreneurial endeavor. You had to go get money, you had to get an office, you had to start this up. And had you ever started a company before?
Yes, I have done this before in education. I've worked with other colleagues, etc. But I found that if I had a dream and I had a way in which I wanted to do this, that it was best if I did it by myself.
Hmm. But you still had to go get funding and stuff, so you had to sell it and...
I have a colleague and I have some supporters who have been very helpful. I also found out that sometimes you have to put in order to get out what you're getting.
Like what? What was a big learning for you there?
Big learning for how to get contributors? Could you rephrase that question?
A big learning for you in how to get your own commitment out there so that people want to commit to support you?
Well, what I would say is that I found out that over the years, many times when you're in joint relationships or partnerships, sometimes partners want to go in different directions that you don't want to go. Also, I had a different philosophy of education. I believe that education should be for everybody and everybody should have accessibility. Mm-hmm. And the way to do that is develop a program that could be both technically advanced for what we need to do in today's society. It has to be affordable and it has to be accessible.
So I don't normally associate teaching and entrepreneurship. And you are a teacher and you started off as a teacher teaching high school in Buffalo, I believe.
Orfield, New York, yes, correct.
But then you just created this university. So how did you go from being a teacher to an entrepreneur?
Well, kind of always been an entrepreneur. And the other institutions I worked with, I came through the Virginia Community College System, first of all, which I felt was at the forefront of education. I was very excited to be a part of that process. But then I had an opportunity to develop my own institution with partners and whatnot. And I did that for several years. And then I decided that I didn't think education, as it's being presented now, is affordable and accessible. And I realized we're opening up the world, so I wanted to go to places like Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan. And I realized it's much easier if you have cloud-based learning to provide that kind of education to those locations. And I also realized that English is the language of business, and most of these countries want to do business in English.
So you're teaching them English as a part of this program?
No, English is actually being taught around the world because it is the language of business. So University of International Business in Almaty in Kazakhstan is all taught in English. Now, granted, it's their second language, so there's some roughness there. But by beaming in education through cloud-based learning to UIB. They can get professors from UNC, Syracuse University, University of North Carolina, USC, etc. They get some of the best faculty around the world, and certainly around the United States.
What's a UIB?
University of International Business, which is in Almaty, Kazakhstan. Okay.
So earlier when we were talking, your ideas about education and how people learn run deep. Tell us something that most of us wouldn't appreciate about how people learn that we can use working with our children, working with our colleagues, you know, even in adult settings. What don't we typically know that we should know?
Well, each individual has what is called their soul, self-organized learning environment. So as an individual, we find that sometimes it's a time factor is a major contributor. A lot of us like to do things with our hands.
Kinesthetically.
Yeah. So when I started learning very young, I worked on cars. I worked around the house. I learned how to wire. I learned how to paint. I did all these things. And I found out I learned a lot by doing. So what we want to do is create a curriculum that engages the student, and it's going to involve the student so that learning comes out of it. I think the most critical element you have in a self-organized learning environment is what works for each individual. You must have good time management skills. You must have good communication skills. But today says that we need to be able to communicate via the internet. We need to be able to use our cell phones, our tablets. And if we're doing this in business day after day, why are we not teaching using the same format in order to work and develop the true working professional? They need to be prepared for the global community they're facing.
So for the keys for us as individuals working with people, supporting people in our families and our work lives and our communities, what can we do to help others around us learn? Just pay attention to how they learn and support that process?
I think we have to recognize that we all learn differently and that we must be there to support them in whatever manner they learn. Some children have what are called deficiencies. I call those not deficiencies, but actually they're gifted. It's just that they learn differently. So we have to learn to recognize that. This is just one way of learning. Global-based learning is just one way. But it seems to be the way that ties in closely with the international or global community and market that the future graduates are going to have to face when they leave college or university.
And you have kids yourself.
I have two beautiful children.
Mm-hmm. And what did you learn about learning from them?
I had one child in particular who had difficulty reading. But I found out when he got involved in games, now I'm going back a few years, there was something called Atari. He picked up Atari very quickly, and he learned because he got involved. And that was the first clue to me that if I can involve him and engage him, he was going to learn.
Great story. What's the website?
Website is www.dulisuniversity.org.
This is your host, Dana Theus. I'd like to thank my co-host and sponsor here, Mark Cohen with Opti4, for helping me structure these interviews and hopefully keeping it interesting and exciting for you. I would like to thank you, our listening audience, for listening because stories, good stories. Kevin Reynolds, President, Cardinal Bank. Paul Maloney, President, Carr Maloney, PC. Dr. Faye Avery, President and Founder, Dulles University. And Buddy Reiser, Executive Director, Loudoun County Department of Economic Development. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. and federalnewsradio.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements.